Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
So sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Live we are. It's Friday night. This is the Round Table, and as has become the case more often than not, the table, again, isn't round tonight. No one else has come. I'm here by myself. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to do a total free speech night. We're going to do an open mic night. You call me at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about. We got to change that intro, don't we? From the heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America. Well, we're not. We're not a constitutional republic anymore. In the first place, we don't care much for the Constitution anymore. But more importantly, we're not a republic anymore. We are almost a direct democracy. We are a majority rules. The majority in this country now gets to tromp all over the minority. The majority of people want Obamacare changed. The majority of people in this country by 60-40 do not want an individual mandate to buy insurance. The majority of people in this country, even on election day, by 64-40, wish we would have some change in Obamacare. But the majority of people voted to keep that program in, and so we're going to get it. We are now almost a direct democracy. We have a caller on the line. We have no call screener tonight, so we're rolling the dice. Here we go. You're on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Who's this?
Richard Gates from Keokuk, Iowa.
Hey, Richard from Iowa. How you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
What you bring us tonight?
Well, I'm listening to your intro, and I agree. We're almost at a democracy. We've got to have some backup.
Right. What's the backup, Richard?
We repeal the 17th Amendment.
Okay.
We give the states the voice back they were intended to have by our founders.
Okay. I couldn't agree with you more. The 17th Amendment is probably one of the worst things that we've done since the Constitution was written. With its disappearance, we seem to have lost the 9th and 10th Amendments as well. States do not have the backbone right now to stand behind the 9th and 10th, do they?
No, they don't, because they don't have a voice in Washington. And this is one of the roadblocks that the founders had to ensure that we had limited government.
So there's been a lot of talk. In the last week or so about whether or not we need to do an Article 5 Constitutional Convention. How do you feel about that?
Constitutional Convention at this point would be a disaster because we have half of Americans depending on an entitlement society.
Okay, so then tell me, Richard, how with the problems that you've mentioned, with no voice in Washington, with the states having no representation in Washington, D.C., how do we repeal 17? I mean, with the short of a constitutional convention under Article 5, how do we repeal 17? We're not going to get the Congress to do it.
No, we have to go and we have to make a direct appeal to our state legislatures and our governors to promote the idea. And we have to have a lot of grassroots support in that effort. And I think we can get that done, just as the Tea Party has done with the elections in 2010. We just have to get the people informed and educated on all of these issues.
What happened to the election of 2012?
In 2012, I believe that the Tea Party.
Is the Tea Party losing strength, Richard?
No, because I know of new groups that are starting right now.
Uh huh.
But I think that you know, we made the decision that in the Tea Party movement, in the 9/12 movement, that the better choice was to go with the Republican Party. And I think that the Republican Party's been around for a long, long time, and they've got the good old boy system, and they were able to rebound from 2010 and say, okay, we got it. We'll take over from here, and I think we allowed them to do that.
Oh, so you think the Republican Party screwed it up?
Oh, sure they did.
Are you a Republican?
No, I'm a registered Republican. I'm a constitutional conservative.
And what does that mean?
That means that I believe in the Constitution. I swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I believe that the progressive movement has infiltrated both parties.
So tell me, because I've had this discussion with many, many groups in the last three months, even leading up to the election. Where does your being a constitutional conservative put you at odds with the Republican Party?
It's their bureaucratic stance. You know, it's this guy's turn to be elected to this office, or this guy's got a lot of money and this guy's got this or that. It's not about principles. It's not about character. And that's what we got to get back to, is we've got to be electing people that's going to be truly representing the people in their district.
Okay.
Not just the party line.
I don't know how long you've been listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and specifically me on Mondays and Fridays, but if you don't know it, I'm a libertarian. I'm not a member of the Libertarian Party, but my ideology is libertarian. The 14 enumerated powers of the Constitution, that's all the government gets. And that puts me at odds with the Republican Party ideologically. If you're a constitutional conservative and not a Republican, how are you at odds with the Republican Party ideologically? I mean, what is your problem with the Republican Party as far as constitutional conservatism goes?
Well,
I mean, I'm trying to agree with you here. There is a significant difference between the Republican Party of today and what the Constitution stands for.
And sure there is. And okay, so like let's take Boehner.
Okay.
Okay. He's willing to strike a deal.
Right.
I think that
on what? Pick an issue.
On taxes.
Okay, on taxes for the rich. Increase taxes for the rich. He's willing to strike a deal on that.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead then.
Okay. My problem with that is the taxes that we have now are unconstitutional if you remove the 16th Amendment. The 16th and 17th Amendment were brought in by progressives in 1913. Okay. Those two things right there have done more to destroy our nation than anything that any outside source has done, from a foreign country.
Okay, so what do you want to replace the 16th Amendment with, Richard?
The fair tax.
Okay, consumption tax, no corporate tax.
Absolutely.
Okay.
No consumption, no income tax, no corporate tax, no investment taxes, no estate taxes.
Okay, so the Republican Party then is out to lunch on taxation.
I believe
because there wasn't a single candidate except Herman Cain on the stage when the whole thing started that was in favor of the fair tax. They were all in favor of some modification of the income tax.
Absolutely. And then just take a look at the conversation as it goes on right now, okay? Everybody's talking about, well, we've got to have tax reform. For the last several years, the fair tax has been on the books. It's been in committee. It's got 70 co-sponsors or even more now. I don't know. I don't know. For the fair tax.
Right.
So, all right, what's the problem? Bring it to the floor, get it to a vote.
Well, I mean, we both know what the problem is. You know, the powers in either house of the legislature are not going to let it come to the floor because it takes their power away.
Absolutely.
Right. So where but else? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But who is supposed to have the power?
Well, you and me.
Absolutely. So it's up to us to push it.
And so here we go. I mean, I'm from the great state of Missouri. I've forgotten who you got up there. I used to know. But I'm from the great state of Missouri where we are represented by Claire McCaskill, Roy Blunt, and in my neck of the woods, Billy Long. Now, three absolute progressives. Two of them are Republican progressives and one is a Democratic progressive. We seem to be stuck in this. And as I talk to people around the great state of Missouri, I become more and more convinced that we're stuck in this thing that you hear about and you've been hearing about for the last 30 years, and that is, you know, Congress sucks, but my congressman is fine.
And your first point was that they were all progressives.
Right.
Okay, until we adopt the same type of strategy, Vladimir Lenin says that you give me your school kids for 4 years and they'll never go back. Okay, that's just one point. We've got to have a longer range vision, and we have to be able to get into these other groups, into the education system, into the media. We've got to do those types of things because we've got to get our message out. Because we got a great message.
What is our message?
Our message is individual responsibility, individual liberty, individual opportunity, and the Reagan message of the shining city on the hill.
How do you use that message, Richard, and this is where it gets critical, how do you use that message to counter the message that the Democrats are giving, that they're there to help poor people, they're there to help minorities, they're there to help, you know, I mean, how do you counter their message that sounds so attractive to the American on the street, to the Christian left? How do you counter that message with individual liberty, individual responsibility? How do you do that?
Because you have to point to their record. We have to make their record known. You know, 47% on some type of government program. You have to make the point known that the most abortions that are done in the black community. We have to make those points known. We've got to make it known that, you know, half of the students that graduate with over $20,000 worth of student debt, and then they move back in with mom and dad because they can't find a damn job. I mean, these are the things we've got to get out there and let them know there's a record. There's a history of where the progressives have already failed.
Okay, Richard, so here we go. I mean, do we have a way to translate our message into liberty actually helps the poor person, into personal responsibility actually helps the minority of the nation? Following the Constitution actually helps everybody instead of hurting everybody, and that dependence or government handouts actually hurt. How do we translate that message?
Benjamin Franklin was one of our founding fathers, as you well know.
Uh-huh.
He also started the first post office.
Right.
Yeah. He also started the idea of a fire department.
Uh-huh.
He also came up with the stove that they started putting into kitchens. The Franklin stove. You know why that was?
Why was that, Richard?
Because most of the deaths of young women was because with the previous means that they had for cooking, that their clothes would catch on fire and they'd burn to death.
Ah.
I see. So Franklin did all that. He started a newspaper, the Almanac.
Right.
This is all done with the liberty provided by the Constitution.
Okay. Now, Benjamin Franklin had a lot of money.
How much money did he have?
Oh, I don't know. He had a lot of money. He was very wealthy for his day. I haven't seen his passbook account, so I don't know. But I do know that Benjamin Franklin was a wealthy man. Thomas Jefferson was a wealthy man. George Washington was a landed noble. How do we, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. What do we say to the guy who's getting out of college with $20,000 worth of debt to convince him that the liberty that we say saved Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin? What do we say to this guy that's getting out of college to convince him that that's the world he wants?
Well, it's very simple.
He wants a world where he gets his college loans paid off.
Well, it's pretty simple to me. I mean, we got $16 trillion worth of debt. Right now, that equates to somewhere around $50,000 per person.
$125,000 per family.
Yeah. So, we've got to get that message out as well that, hey, this is what you got. Here's the changes we can make. That reduces or eliminates your debt in the future. This is what's going to take care of your family in the future. This is what's going to take care of your children, your grandchildren, and make sure that they have a better world than what you have.
Great. And here you go. How about this? Benjamin Franklin invents stoves and runs a newspaper because he's wealthy. Let's not demonize him and take his money away, because he needs people to build those stoves. And if you've got $20,000 worth of college debt, why don't you go get a job building stoves, and then someday you can have a lot of money too.
Absolutely. And then you have the time that, on your weekends or your days off, you've got time to be creative and inventive and start your own business.
Right. I can't take credit for all of this because I saw a Whittle video today, but whatever led the Republicans to believe they needed to try to defend the fact that Mitt Romney has $250 million in the bank. I mean, why don't they stand up there and say, we're proud that Mitt Romney has $250 million in the bank, because he earned that $250 million, and with that $250 million, he created $1 billion worth of jobs. He put food on 1 million people's tables.
It's because of the progressive movement. And I don't know if you ever seen the 45 goals of the Communist Party in America.
Yes.
That were entered into the congressional record in 1963.
Yes.
Okay. So what they've done is they've infiltrated both parties, and they've moved both parties to the left, so that we're no longer a country that is center-right. Now we've become a country that is center-left, and we're in dangerous territory.
Okay. So now, have you ever been a Republican?
I actually ran for Congress in this past election.
Really? For U.S. Congress?
Yes, sir.
For the House of Representatives in an Iowa district?
Yes.
Okay. How'd you do?
I dropped out before the primary because I just did not have the means to compete.
Takes a lot of money, doesn't it?
It takes a whole lot of money. And I work in a factory as a machinist.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. Congratulations and thank you. That's a noble American profession.
Thank you. But I was competing against two people that one was a corporate lawyer for John Deere.
Mm-hmm.
And another was another private business owner, but both of them had the means that they could just suspend their jobs and campaign full time.
Right, and this was actually the two other people running for the primary nomination for the Republican Party, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. And which one won?
The lawyer.
The lawyer. Did he win? Did he? Is he going to Washington or did he lose?
He lost.
Oh.
Big time.
Okay. Why?
Because he was a lawyer, he couldn't relate to the people in this district.
Is that a conservative district?
No, it's a liberal
okay.
district.
Oh, okay.
But there's
right.
a lot of farmers, and it's a very rural district.
Right.
None of the people I was running against could speak clearly on the issues or give statistics or.
Right.
Yep. You know,
so is it too late, Richard, or can the Republican Party be saved?
I don't know if it can be saved. Not without change. I mean, it has to change. It can't be the good old boy system. It can't be, well, it's your turn or his turn or whatever. I mean, we've got to get back down to principles and character.
See, here's the problem that I see with the Republican Party. There's a terrible problem within the Republican Party of multiple personality disorder. You've got a Republican Party elite who says that the conservative candidate is Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney standing up there saying, I'm the conservative. And you've got all of these Ron Paul people who say, he's not conservative, we're conservative. You know, and then you've got the Rick Santorums and the Michelle Bachmans over on the abortion is everything side who say none of them are conservative. We're conservative. So what the Republican Party's got to do in my mind before it can start, and I will never be a conservative. I will never be a Republican. But I think there's a place on the stage for the Republican Party, and I think it should survive and always be there. What they've got to do before they can even move another inch, in my mind, is they've got to put a definition on conservative.
You know, I would agree with that. I would like to address the Ron Paul supporters.
Okay.
Okay. Because I've argued with a bunch of them.
Okay.
But Ron Paul, you know, he comes off some crazy stuff that's really, really far right wing. And you have to wonder, how does he keep winning elections? And when you get down into the weeds, you find out that he voted no on every bill.
Right.
But you also find out that along the way, he was putting in all of these little additions to these bills that he
right.
knew he was going to lose. and that were going to get passed.
Right.
That,
he got his,
that would,
he got his district's pork in there, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Right.
Okay, so how can you say that he's a libertarian or a constitutionalist?
Well,
and
I don't.
And that he was looking out for the, you know, our national best interest, if that's what he was doing.
Okay, so let's get down to this, and I agree with you. I don't say he was a constitutionalist, but he, let's get down to Richard and the Republican Party here. Of all the candidates that were standing on the stage before the first candidate, Herman Cain, dropped out, who was the most conservative? You have Michelle Bachmann, you have Rick Santorum, you have Newt Gingrich, you have Herman Cain, you have Mitt Romney, you have Ron Paul, you have the guy that used to be an ambassador, Huntsman. Of those people, who was the and Rick Perry. So of all those people, who was the quote unquote conservative? Which of all those people would you rally the Republican Party behind?
I would have to say probably Rick Santorum.
Okay. Okay, so the Republican Party should define conservative as something along the Rick Santorum line.
Well, that would be my view.
Okay.
See, the whole thing is we've got to come to an agreement on that. I don't think one person's individual perspective is going to make that difference, because that's where we have the problem, is because we had 10 different primary candidates and we had 10 different
definitions
perspectives on what
right.
the priorities were.
Right.
And I think we have to come to an agreement on what our priorities are, and that's only going to happen with some major discussion and setting out some priorities.
Okay, so see, what escapes me here is how you do that, Richard. I don't know how you do that. If you say life, anti-choice is going to be a part of what it takes to be conservative. If you say that anti-gay is what it's going to take to be conservative. If you say strong national defense is what it's going to take to be conservative. Restructuring the tax code is what it's going to take to be conservative with a specific plan. Now, at what point in time, then, does this party, quote unquote, become so intransigent then with those things that, again, you've isolated half your people?
Well, it was Reagan that said that if 75% of the people agree with you, or if someone agrees with 75% of what you agree with, then mm-hmm. they are your friend.
Okay.
And I think we need to adopt a similar type of strategy that, you know what, if you believe most of what I believe, then we are allies in this struggle.
Okay. And I don't have a problem with that. As a libertarian, I am going to probably never vote for the libertarian candidate in my lifetime, because that is never going to be a viable candidate with a chance to win. Now, in my mind, Ron Paul was never a Republican. Ron Paul was always a libertarian. I mean, he had no business running on the Republican stage, and he certainly had no business, and his followers had no business, being upset because the Republican Party shunned him. He was never a Republican.
And I'm probably going to have a lot of emails from this, but a lot of the Ron Paul supporters just wanted to legalize pot.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. I'm a libertarian. The government has no constitutional right to tell me I can't put heroin in my veins. Okay? So I don't have a problem with that. But that given that definition, Ron Paul should never have run on the Republican ticket.
I agree.
So
I agree.
So so I think we agree then that, that if the Republican Party is going to be saved, the immediate priority needs to be to define what it's going to be. Is it going to be pro-life? If so, Romney should never have been a character in play. Is it going to be pro-fair tax? If so, then Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney and Ron Paul should have never been in play. Is it going to be, you know, and so what you need to do before you can save the Republican Party is you need to define what the Republican Party is going to be. And that is a definition that has slipped away from you folks over the last 30 years.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Why do we need to save the Republican Party?
Well, I don't care if you save it or not. I mean, that's what I'm hearing all over, you know, and I run in a circle where 95% of the people are Republicans. So I don't have a problem with the Republicans wanting to save their party. You may be right. Yeah, you may be right. And it doesn't matter. I'm a libertarian. It doesn't matter to me whether we ever save it or not. But
I'm not right or wrong. I just pose a question.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing the Republican Party saved. There's a place on the stage for the Republican Party. There's a place in the discussion for anti-choice. It's not constitutional. It's not right. But there's a place in the debate for it. You know, there's a place in the debate for defining marriage, I guess. It's not right, it's not constitutional, but there's a place in the debate for it. I don't have a problem with the Republican Party's salvation, but it's not going to happen. You know, I just have all my Republican friends saying, we need to save this party, we got to save the party. And it's not going to happen until you do something about this multiple personality disorder that the party has.
Yep. And so what do you think the solution is?
I think the solution is that the Republicans probably hadn't ought to wait 4 years before they have another convention. I think the solution is that the Republicans ought to put out the call to the state committees and say, we need to have a convention in the next 6 or 8 months. We need to get the Republican state caucuses together. We need to hammer this thing out. We need to stay as long as it takes to hammer out what we are. And then that's it. You know, from that point forward, if you don't meet the criteria of being a Republican, you don't get a shot at the Republican ticket.
I think we need to just inform the population of what's going on, what we've done in the past, what our history is, what our Constitution means, why we adopted a Constitution, 14 years after our Declaration of Independence?
Yeah.
I think we need people that are informed about the issues, about the Constitution, about our history. I think everything sorts itself out from there.
Well, that's fine. That's fine with me. You know, I'm a libertarian. You know that's fine with me. If we inform people of that, if we educate people with that, both parties die.
And that's fine with me. That's why I want to repeal the 17th Amendment.
Yeah, because neither one of these parties has anything to do with constitutionalism. That's for sure.
Yeah. So
okay.
I think that should be our goal.
Well, I'll go along with that. I don't have a problem with that at all.
I've got a good introductory book that lays out all of the things that have happened in the last 230 years.
Uh huh.
And it's an e-book. It's available on SmashWords.com, and it's called The Lawn Chair Revolution.
Right.
And I think for any startup group, it's a good means to start the conversation. And I talk about a lot of our history. I talk about the progressive movement, talk about the 45 communist goals set forth in 1963 in the congressional record. And at the end, I lay out some things that people can do to get involved.
All right. What's the book? What's the book title? Where do people find it, and how do they And where do they find kind of a synopsis of it?
It's on Smashwords.com.
Okay.
And the title of the book is The Lawn Chair Revolution.
Okay. And it's by Richard?
Richard Gates.
Gates. Richard Gates, just like the last director of the Defense Department.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Okay. there you go, folks. And listen, starting last Monday night, on the Monday night show, from 7 to 9 on the Hour of Truth, we have started a program that's going to run for about a year. It's called Constitution 101. We started way back before the Constitution was written. We started by defining exactly what Richard and I have been talking about a little bit tonight, and that was we started Monday by defining the ideologies that go into deciding what the Constitution is all about: conservative ideology, libertarian ideology, and liberal ideology. And we start by defining what those terms actually mean, how they've evolved over the years, and how the ideology of those terms got incorporated in the Constitution. Next Monday night, we're going to talk about the Articles of Confederation, how they were a step toward the Constitution, but way inadequate. What happened to those articles, and then we're going to move right into the Constitution. We're going to talk about the Constitution. We're going to talk about the enumerated powers. We're going to talk about the limits on the government. We're going to talk about the disastrous Bill of Rights that should never have been tacked onto the end of the Constitution. And then we're going to move on, and we're going to follow that Constitution down through history, right through the very first sessions of Congress and the very first sessions of the Supreme Court. And we're going to track it down, and we're going to branch every time we screwed it up. We're going to show how we screwed it up more and more and more and more as time went by. And then we're going to show you over a whole year of lecture how lecture and discussion. Please call in every Monday night and let's talk about it. How it got so bad, and what we need to do if we can. To get back to where we were. We may not be able to. But I'm going to tell you one thing, you people out there who loved Ron Paul and said, I won't vote for Mitt Romney because he's not conservative enough. I'll tell you something out there, you people who loved Rick Santorum and said, I won't vote for Mitt Romney because he's not conservative enough. It took us 150 years to get this bad off. And it's going to take us the better part of that to get back if we don't do so with violent revolution. It's not something we're going to do in a week or a presidential term. And so while you're thinking about whether or not Mitt Romney was conservative enough for you, just remember, it doesn't take a lot to be better than what you've got in the White House now. And you're not going to fix this thing in degrees of 90. You're going to fix it in degrees of 2 or 3. What else you got for us, Richard? Do you want to say anything else tonight?
Well, I have to agree with a lot of what you got to say. I think that we've got to concern ourselves with how we take back the media, how we take back our education system. Those are things that we can do that are going to make long-term changes.
Right. And in my mind, I don't know how we take back the media. As long as the media is about money, you don't take it back without money. But in my mind, the way we take back the education system is one of those small degrees, and that is we localize it again. We do it the way it was supposed to be done. When your school in your community is teaching the values according to the people who live in the neighborhood where the school is located, then you're going to get your value structure back.
All comes back to the 17th Amendment, doesn't it?
It does. It all comes back to that. Okay. Thanks. Good call, Richard. Good call. Thank you very much. You call back anytime. We're going to take a break now. We've got to do it. Got to do it. And when we come back, we're going to carry on with some of the other news of the week. This is Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's the Friday Night Roundtable. We're talking to Richard, and we'll be back in a minute and 45 seconds.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We are back. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's the Friday Night Roundtable. I'm Dave, and I'm just kind of here alone tonight, wagging it. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do next because none of my compadres could make it tonight. We're 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. It is total free speech night. It is open mic night. You call as Richard did. Good call, Richard. Thank you very much. With whatever it is you want to talk about, Richard's got some stuff on the ball there, Richard, in Iowa. I hope he runs again. He seems to know exactly what he wants where we need to go, and we need some people like Richard up there in Washington, D.C., speaking on behalf of you folks in Iowa. That last piece that we did, I want to talk a little bit about. We are, folks, within $100 of our goal on Secret Santa. Secret Santa is a program we started last year when Missouri Grassroots Coalition only had a membership of about one-tenth of what it has now. And we started this program where we had a goal of collecting some money and going into a department store on Christmas Eve, late on Christmas Eve, when it was too late for some families who had put some toys in layaway at some time during the Christmas shopping season. And for some reason or other, who knows why? We never know why. We're not able to get those toys. We go into the manager. We say, "Hey, look, find us a layaway that's got toys for children that here at 4 p.m. on Christmas Eve has not been paid off, and maybe payments behind. It's pretty clear it won't be paid off. That these children aren't getting these toys. We don't care why. We don't care what their politics is. We don't care anything except the fact that we want this to pay this layaway off." And we pay that layaway off, and we leave, $3 or $4 or $10 so that the parents have to come in and pay something to get the layaway out. And that's the Secret Santa. I mean, that is the Secret Santa just dropping out of the sky and curing an ill for some family on Christmas Eve. There's nothing about this that is glory for Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It just is something that we do. You know, I saw a TV show today, and I'm sidetracked here a little bit, that talked about the health benefits, the reduction in stress, the lowering of physical stress, the reduction in emotional and mental stress that occurs when you show gratitude, when you give thanks. It was a Thanksgiving theme, and the suggestion was that you make yourself a list of things that you you have that you should be grateful for. And when you start feeling stressed, when you start feeling down, bring out that list. Bring out that list and go over it. And you'll find that whatever your turmoil of the moment is, it's not as bad as it could be. It will reduce your stress. But I diverged there a little bit to say that you know, giving is the same thing. It is a gratifying feeling. It is a stress reducer. And it really, especially giving without any thought of return. And that's what this is. That's what Secret Santa is. We gathered $250 last year, and we were able with that to spring two layaways. We immediately set ourselves, and listen, we didn't start till December of last year. We immediately set ourselves a goal for next year, of which is now this year, of $500 that we hoped would help us, allow us to help four families, a double, basically. We're within $100 of that goal. We've been collecting all year, $2 here. Now, we have had some $100 donors, so we've acknowledged them. But mostly $2 here, $3 there, $5, $10, whatever you can do. I know this is the hardest part. This is why we started and collected all year. I know the hardest part of the year for us to beg you for money is November and December. Although it's been a hard year all year now with all your favorite candidates coming after you day after day for more money, more money. But I know the hardest time for us to beg you for money. You've got the kettle, you've got the angel tree at the mall, you've got the church, you've got the missions, you've got your own family. You've got the food, you've got Thanksgiving, you've got your own family's Christmas. But we're not asking for a lot. We're within $100 here, folks. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. That's Missouri Grassroots Coalition. Spell it all out. Cram it all into one word for the internet. You know the way it has to be. It can't be more than one word. There's no spaces. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. And when you get there, in the top, there's a menu. Click on the Secret Santa button. Go to the Secret Santa page. Read about it. If you don't understand what I said, it's all explained to there, how it works and why we're doing it. And go there right now, while you're on your computer, while you're listening to me. You don't have to turn me off to do it. Open a new window. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Secret Santa button. And use PayPal to send us $3, $5, $7, $10, $50 if you can, $100 if you can. I'm not going to complain at all if we go over our goal. Now listen, and then I'm done talking about this. There is zero overhead here. Zero. There are no salaries at Missouri Grassroots Coalition for anything, let alone for Secret Santa. There's no cost of distributing this money. There is no advertising at all. This thing only gets pushed on our Facebook page, in text messages to our subscribers, and here on the radio. There's no advertising. There is zero overhead. Every penny you send to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, Secret Santa, is used specifically for this purpose. Now, we hear it over and over again in the conservative circles, how we don't need government to be a charity. We do not need government to be a charity. Americans take care of Americans. We can take care of our own. Is it just talk? Is that just talk? Or are we ready to do that? Come on, tonight, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check on the Secret Santa button. And send us some money. Send us a couple of bucks. A couple of bucks will do it. Okay, here we go. We're going to move on with a little news of the week because nobody's called 347-677-1835 yet to tell us what they want to talk about. So we're going to spend a little while talking about what I want to talk about. Had quite a week in the Benghazi hearings, didn't we? I posted a little something on one of the online social networks today about how the president wants to propose Rice for the UN Ambassador Rice for the job of Secretary of State, and how ludicrous that whole idea was, because this woman did one of two things. She came out and intentionally lied to you 14 days in a row about what happened in Benghazi, and this videotape and blah, 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 blah. She either came out 14 days in a row and lied to you, or she came out 14 days in a row telling you something because someone had put it on a piece of paper in front of her without checking the facts. The ambassador of the UN spouting out information without checking the facts. One of those two things happened, period. There's no discussion and no argument about that. One of those two things happened. Because what she said about the videotape was not true. How do we know it wasn't true? Well, General Petraeus said it wasn't true. General Petraeus knew within 30 minutes what was going on in Benghazi and what was causing it. Now, General Petraeus, folks, was the director of the CIA. This was not a guy who, like Ambassador Rice, for example, has a conduit to the president via a memo that is written and lands on his desk the next morning. General Petraeus is a man who picks up the damn phone and calls the White House, who picks up the phone and calls the Oval Office and says, put the president on. So General Petraeus knew within 30 minutes what was going on and why it was going on. And he picked up the phone, you better believe, and called the president of the United States. Now, if the president didn't take that call, okay. If the president didn't heed that call, well, okay, take that wherever it goes. But the idea that nobody in the White House in a position of authority knew what was going on and why it was going on is preposterous. So to send Ambassador Rice out day after day after day to talk about a videotape is either a case of Ambassador Rice lying to you, or it is a case of Ambassador Rice coming out, giving a briefing as though she were knowledgeable without having any knowledge of what she was talking about. Then we get down to, why didn't the president and the Department of Defense go in there and stop this thing? Well, the Secretary of Defense has testified already that he told the White House that he knew the White House was aware of the fact that he could get rapid deployment forces there within 2 hours. It took 4 hours. Ambassador Stevens died 4 hours after the attack started. That he could get rapid deployment forces there in 2 hours. And that he had F-15s in the area that could be there in a 15-minute flight. Now, why then wasn't that done? Ambassador Rice tells us over and over again that by the time it was we realized what was going on, it was too late. I understand Ambassador Rice. Don't call me and tell me Ambassador Rice was doing her best because she's not in on the decision making in the Situation Room in the White House and she's not privy to what discussions go on in the Oval Office. But we're still back to Ambassador Rice either knowingly lied to you because we had time to save those people on the ground, or she came to you day after day with information that she knew nothing about. She came to you day after day spouting facts without having checked whether they were accurate or not. Okay, so Ambassador Rice is a politician She's an ambassador to the United Nations. Either one of those is certainly within her purview of acceptability, I would guess. But neither of those is a strong qualifier, in my mind, for becoming Secretary of State. And here's the Rice problem I have, okay? Condoleezza Rice, another Rice, another black woman, came and told us that a country that the president wanted to attack had weapons of mass destruction. I personally think she lied. I personally am fairly certain that the White House knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. But that doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that at that time, if you were a Democrat, if you were a Rice hater, then you're challenging that was what you needed to do as a loyal American, because loyal Americans challenge their government when the government lies or cheats. That's what loyal Americans do. That's what the Constitution says loyal Americans do. However, when this Rice comes to us knowingly lying, and anyone says anything about it, they're racist. They're not loyal Americans, they're racists. Now, if you don't have a problem with that double standard, then your right to vote ought to be removed. I mean, it just ought to be removed. You had not to have any kind of right to have any voice in deciding how this country is run, because that's the way it's going. That is what Richard was talking about as far as the media issues goes. That is what Richard was talking about as far as the majority overrunning the minority goes. And that is what's wrong with America. It's the Rice Wars, is what it is. It is a Rice who probably lied to you and was condemned, and it was a Rice who obviously lied to you and who was praised, and if you dare condemn her, you're a racist. Boy, how about this Hostess Twinkie thing, huh? I think it's over. We talked about it Monday when it was not quite over. When it wasn't quite over. We talked about it again Wednesday when it was close to over. A judge at that time had ordered them back to the table. There was an interview this morning on one of the mainstream media outlets, one of the White House news outlets, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, one of them, where they talked to a member of the Bakers Union who literally came right out and said that he would rather be unemployed than take a pay cut. I want you to look at this now. There are 18,000 jobs lost. You can't blame George Bush for these 18,000 jobs lost. You can blame the progressive / liberal / socialist / Democrat, whatever the in vogue term is, for those people over there who believe that labor unions ought to be the fourth branch of government. You can blame them for this. Because of those 18,000 unemployed people, less than 5,000 were members of the Bakers Union. Of 18,000 people who just lost a job, 5,000, a little less than 5,000, caused that job loss, and proudly. I mean, let that sink in for just a moment. Let that sink in for just a moment. Because of the policies of the progressive slash liberal slash socialist slash Democrat in this country, because of the policies of that group, 18,000 people were unemployed by 5,000 people. You want to talk about a minority? You want to talk about the tail wagging the dog? You want to talk about an injustice of phenomenal proportions? 5,000 people made a decision that cost 18,000 people their jobs. And because of the policies of this regime, the 13,000 could not do anything about it. Because of the policies of this regime, Hostess could not cater to the 13,000 people who wished to continue to take bread home to their families, because they had to bow to the 5,000 who didn't care whether those 13,000 fed their families or not. I mean, where have we gone in this country that has gotten this crazy? Where have we gone in this country that can happen? And then you want to move on to this a little bit more in this crazy union thing. Our Walmart, oh my gosh, you know, a handful of Walmart employees, two of them according to their own manifesto, but maybe more than that, probably 5 or 10 or 12, formed this organization because they were grumpy about, you know, the fact that their boss was a jerk. Got some union help, got some liberal help, sent out a declaration that they were declaring war on Walmart, and organized a Black Friday walkout. Now listen, about 40 Walmart employees didn't go to work this morning nationwide. About the same number of people who didn't go to work on Black Friday last year for one reason or another, who just didn't show up, called in sick, called in with a flat tire, just no call, no showed, and took their one of three write-ups for doing so, one of their coachings. 40 nationwide. And about 1,500 people nationwide marched on pickets in front of Walmart stores. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, just stop for a minute and think about that. Of the 1,500 people who were picketing Walmart stores today, 1,460 had no business being involved in any kind of dispute between an employee and their employer. Of the 1,500 people trying to disrupt an honest business, I'm not anti-union. Listen to me. Unions have all the right in the world to collectively bargain with employers and to strike if they can't reach an agreement. But of the 1,500 people who, quote-unquote, struck Walmart this morning, 1,460 had no business being there. None. Yes, they have a right. This is America. They have a right to be there. It's all about freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. Okay, they do. I'll stand behind that. They have a right to be there. I'm on your side. They have a constitutional right to march on the sidewalk in front of Walmart as long as they don't violate Walmart's property. As long as they don't trespass, they can march up and down the little piece of grass right away in front of the Walmart store. But they have no business interjecting themselves in a dispute between 40 employees and their employer. That's the problem. That's the problem. And happily, although I don't like Walmart and don't shop there, you know, it has nothing to do with the politics. It has nothing to do with the work ethic. It has to do with the fact that nobody at Walmart gives a shit about me, the customer. You know. But that's beside the point, and I'm very happy to see that none of this craziness got in the way of Walmart's shopping day. Shopping was not down as a result of this. And thank you very much, Americans. We're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about what's coming up on Missouri Grassroots Radio in the next week. And then I guess if nobody has anything that they want to talk about tonight, I guess we're just going to call it a night. I'm Dave, it's Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
I'm here, you're here, it's Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, it's Friday Night Roundtable, and there's nobody else here. 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. I wish Lisa could have been here tonight. There's been a lot of talk this week about an Article 5 Constitutional Convention out and around, I've been talking with some people about this for 2 or 3 days now. And they just don't get it. And Lisa and I could have had a nice discussion about it, because Lisa's one of them scaredy cats who thinks that if we had a constitutional convention, the world would dissolve and kryptonite would explode out of the street drains and everyone would be destroyed and eaten alive by Godzilla monsters. If nothing else. A constitutional convention is a Hail Mary pass that might save us, because without something we're lost. Does that mean that in the next 4 years things are going to go totally to hell? I think that's a likelihood. I don't think it's a necessity. We do have a shot in 2 years of stopping Obamacare one more time. One more shot, probably. We can take the Senate and the House and make it stop. If this thing goes on for four years, who knows? Who knows? You know, I did get caught up myself in the talk before the election of, you know, if Obama gets reelected, it's the end of the world. And who knows, it might be. It might be. I'm not convinced that it's a dead sure thing. I think that probably we on this side are making that more of a likelihood rather than less of a likelihood the way we're tackling this thing. You know how gullible the average American voter is. You know that at least 53% of the people who voted should not be allowed to vote because of the And I don't even want to say because of their ideology, because their ideology is certainly something they're allowed to hold. But I say that because anyone who stands there and listens to a liar say, more people are working now than were working when I came to office, and vote according to that, they hadn't ought to be voting. And anyone who stands there and listens to a person say, I reduced the deficit, and votes accordingly, hadn't ought to be voting. And anyone who stands there and hears a guy say that that he's reduced the cost of health insurance for the majority of Americans, and votes accordingly, hadn't ought to be voting, because they're not educated voters. They don't take the time to go out and see, is this guy lying to me? I mean, they might even feel that he's lying because they look around at how many people are unemployed. But they it's easier for them to listen to the lies than to go out and check it out. So given the fact that 53% of the people who cast votes shouldn't be voting, but will be voting next time, the last thing that we can afford is for anyone to be able to tell that 53% of the people that the fact that the deficit is now running $2 trillion a year, and the debt is now $20 trillion in 4 years, is our fault. You see what I mean? Do you see what I mean? We cannot afford for anyone to be able to tell these 53% of the useful idiots out there that it's our fault. I mean, they were able to take 4 years of devastatingly bad policy instituted by a devastatingly bad president and blame it on some guy 4 years ago. And it worked. It worked. It worked because 53% of those people who voted shouldn't even be voting. I mean, if you can do that, if you can take President Obama's 4 years and blame that publicly on anything but President Obama, and it work, then a whole lot of people shouldn't be voting. Because I want to use the word stupid, but it's beyond stupid. It's beyond gullible. It's irresponsible, that's for sure. It's almost evil. It's almost evil that you would listen to a man tell you that everything that he has screwed up is someone else's fault. You know, I don't think that any president of the United States ever, Democrat or Republican, has blamed someone else for anything. I mean, for anything. Not in my lifetime. Richard Nixon didn't blame someone else for Watergate. Ronald Reagan didn't blame someone else for Iran-Contra. Ronald Reagan didn't blame Jimmy Carter for the recession he inherited. He fixed it. If he hadn't fixed it, he wouldn't blame Jimmy Carter for it. He'd say, you know, I didn't fix it. I'll try harder. It is in the position of that much responsibility for that many million people's lives, to not be able to shoulder the blame. I mean, the man is plenty happy to shoulder as much credit as he can garner, to not be able to shoulder the responsibility for doing your job or not doing your job is inexcusable. And so 53% of the people in this country should not be allowed to vote. Should not be allowed to vote. Now, they're going to be allowed to vote. They'll always be allowed to vote. And so, all of that to say this, I think we're going about this wrong. You cannot obstruct what this guy wants to do now. You cannot. Not in the first 2 years anyway. If you take back the Senate and the House by overwhelming majorities, then you can do it for 2 years because things would improve enough just in 2 years of having wiped this thing out and started with a clean slate. Things will improve enough just in 2 years that you'll then be able to maybe rebuild it and then let Barack Obama stand up there 4 years from now and say, oh, it's their fault that what? Things are better now? Oh, it's their fault that what? People are working now? Oh, it's their fault that what? Well, so get out of the way. Get out of the way. Let him have everything he wants. It you can't do it. You can't pay for it. You can't make it work. And so let it go. Let it go, and don't be the one who can get blamed when the house of cards comes tumbling down, because it's gonna. There's no two ways about it. It's coming. The houses of cards are tumbling down all over the world. Yeah, Greece is going to get bailed out by Germany again, and that's okay. They can do that. You know, the euro is probably going to going to limp by a little while longer. On bailout money from European countries and consortiums, from a little bit from China, and they can do that. This is a multi-trillion-dollar economy, and there's nobody left in the world to bail us out. There's nobody left in the world to do for us what someone might be able to do for Greece for another year, and for what somebody might be able to do for the euro for the next 6 months. There's nobody big enough to do it for us for the next quarter. This president is going to be back by February 20th asking for more debt. Give it to him. Give it to him. Don't fight it. Don't fight it. Don't be to blame, because it's got to fall. It's got to fall. Okay, Monday night, we do the Hour of Truth, where, as I've already said, once we're in the middle of Constitution 101, we'll be talking this Monday about the Articles of Confederation that came into effect even before independence was granted. Not before independence was declared, but before independence was granted. We're going to talk about the Continental Congress. We're going to talk about why that didn't work, why we needed the Constitution instead. And then we're going to talk about how we got around to beginning the process of the Constitution. We're going to go on from there as weeks go by. Talking probably for several weeks about the actual drafting of the Constitution, the debates that went into that, how these libertarian-minded men decided what the Constitution was and wasn't going to be. We're going to talk about something that should probably ease the mind of the con naysayers, and that is, if it had been up to the general public, there would have been no Constitution. If it had been a majority rules, we'd still be under the king. And then we're going to take that Constitution, probably starting in 5 or 6 weeks, and for every week thereafter, and we're going to track it through history a little bit at a time to show you how incrementally things went wrong, how incrementally we lost the whole idea of personal responsibility and thereby lost the idea of liberty, because the two go hand in hand. On Wednesday nights, Lisa comes along and with the Culture Vigilante Show. I know one thing she's going to have on Wednesday is another episode with Ray Cuneo on Agenda 21. Man, this Agenda 21 thing is scary, folks. This is the United Nations, not even part of your government. No part of anything that you elected or have anything to say about or any control over, coming into your town and making law. The United Nations coming to your village and making law as though it were a sovereign body with some degree of authority over you. And this is not a conspiracy theory. It's in black and white. It's written down. It's called Agenda 21. It says what it's going to do. You can Google it on up if you want to and read it word for word. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go into Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and we're going to force these things on the people there. And then on Thursday, the hillbilly Kevin Harnett comes along, and he always has something good. And then on Friday again next week, I guess we're going to have a roundtable. I don't know how much longer these roundtables are going to last. I know we'll have one next week, so I'll just put that on your calendar. We'll have one next week, and then depending on how that goes, we'll either have them from that point forward or not. We do have some things coming up on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We have several more ideas for different shows on different nights. Cynthia Davis has indicated there might be some interest in coming along and doing a 1 hour a week show. There's a new group out there called the Missouri Sovereignty Movement. And we've been talking to them about coming along and guesting on some of our shows, and maybe if that goes well, getting something going. We have a couple more future prospective hosts that would take different hours on different nights. So we're growing fast. That's going to be a wrap for the roundtable tonight. That's a little bit of what we've talked about this week and things that are coming and going. We had a good call tonight. We talked quite a bit about what the Republican Party needs to do to try to repair itself, or whether that's even worth the time and energy. And we're going to be back Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. This has been the Roundtable on Friday night, and I'm Dave. Good night, and we love you all. Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.